Hi there, and welcome to the 5th Annual Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. I'm so happy you're here. I'm your host, Devin Kunzman, toddler expert and the founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. I'm on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood, nurture their little one's development, and create confidence in their parenting skills. And that's exactly what we're here to do today. I'm thrilled to introduce you to my dear friend, Dr. Lynetta Willis, psychologist and family empowerment coach. Welcome, Dr. Lynetta.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here again and hang out. It's always a joy to hang out with you, Devin. So,
oh, I'm so excited you're here as well. I know you joined us a few conferences ago, and I'm just so excited for you to be back and share all your wisdom with all the toddler parents and caregivers around the world.
Yes. I am excited. Let's do it.
Yes. Well, before we dive in, there might be some people watching that are like, well, who is this? Maybe they haven't met you and aren't familiar with your work. So could you tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. So Dr. Lynetta Willis, I'm a psychologist and a family empowerment coach. I have been in this field for over 20 years now, and I work with frustrated families, specifically parents and couples, and help them break free from what I like to call stable misery. You know, that space where things are flowing along well, but you're unfulfilled, unhappy, there's no joy, right? And so what I do is I help them to break free from that stable misery and create more harmony and more joy within themselves and within their family. I also have a parent coaching program that it's called Triggered to Transformed. And over the course of a year, I help parents transform their parenting triggers, rewire their brain, so they can actually enjoy parenting more, which is something we all came into this process hoping we'd be able to do, enjoy parenting, but our triggers can kind of get in the way of that sometimes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is so true for parents, for caregivers, for all humans. Triggers can get in the way sometimes. So I love it. And today we're here talking about parenting differently from our past. And I know that many parents and caregivers who are joining us here for this conference are actually here because they want to parent differently from the way that they were raised. And they are interested in learning more about that and what it looks like. And so could you just tell us a little bit more about what you feel it means to parent differently from our past?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the people that come to me, they were raised with what I like to call the four horsemen mindset. So pain, blame, shame, and avoidance were often used in their homes to keep kids in line. And what happens is we go through, like as we get older and go through life, we develop strategies and techniques and things like that so that we can be socially acceptable in public. But then we have kids and they find a way to push every, not consciously, but, you know, be like all of our buttons get pushed and all of these different things. And all of the safeguards we put in place to act appropriate and not to rely on old habits and patterns that were used with us growing up, all those kind of go out the window. And so a lot of the parents that I work with find themselves reacting in ways that frustrate them and leave them feeling shamed. Things that they said, I will never do this. I'll never yell at my kid like this. I'll never hit my kid this way. I'll never hit my kid, period. I'll never do ABC, XYZ. And when they get into those triggered spaces, they find themselves doing it. So when we talk about raising our kids differently from how we were raised, I think it's just a deep desire to shift the legacy, to shift the narrative around how the type of relationship and interactions we should have with our child, right? You know, and retiring the four horsemen or more of that authoritarian mindset in favor of co-creation and connection, right? But that can be really hard to do by yourself. I tell people all the time, triggers are really just unhelpful habits. Right? They're unhelpful habits. And when you start to learn how to shift those habits and how to create different ways of being, the experience of that can be so rewarding and so fulfilling.
Yeah, I agree. And I like that you say that, you know, it's not meant to be done alone, because this is deep work from within, because, you know, our triggers are like our automatic responses. And so I feel that for all of us, it really takes cultivating a practice. There's a learning component and a practicing component that goes into creating these shifts. And I'm curious, what do you feel are some of the main obstacles that can stand in the way for parents to really parent their child differently from the way they were raised, and to just kind of shift the family legacy, even when the desire is there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the deep desire is usually always there, at least for people that come to, in that I speak with. And you're right. It's, I think the first thing is what we're talking about, isolation. There is often a lot of shame that can come out when we say or do things with our children that we're not proud of. Right. And then you go on Instagram and Facebook and all these things, and you see your friends and they're all like throwing leaves in the air with their perfect little children, their Pinterest perfect kids. Right. And you're sitting there in like 3-day-old yoga pants, like, oh my gosh, if I could just get a break. Right. And so sometimes it's easy. I know I've been there, you know, and sometimes it's easier just to keep quiet. Right. And allow that avoidance horseman to come into the narrative and say, you know what? You're the only one. You don't need to complain about this. You need to keep this quiet. And that's why I developed Trigger to Transform, because for an entire year, you get a community, right, where you can connect with people, because community is important. Having the ability to connect with people and learn a new practice in the process, learn different ways of being with yourself and with other people, is absolutely key. And so lack of community or people that you can connect with who get it, right, who understand, I think is one thing. Lack of awareness. So in Trigger to Transform, one of the first things we focus on is getting super clear and aware on what exactly sets you off. What are your triggers? When do you find yourself in this space? You know, we get super clear on that, because if you're not aware, you can't change what you're not aware of, right? So you got to get super clear and super aware. Focusing, like viewing triggers as like unhelpful habits, as opposed to viewing them as a sign that myself or my child are broken. So I often say, how do I put it? You are not broken. Your child is not broken, but you have some habits that need to be. So it's this sense that realize shifting that mindset kind of, so it can release us from that sense of shame, right? Like some things need to be different. So getting clear on what our triggers are, and how they impact who we become in those moments is super important.
Yeah, this is so powerful. As a coach, you know, I work a lot with mindset and the lens that we're looking through. And what I hear you talking about at the end there is really shifting our relationship with our triggers, shifting our relationship with how we relate to ourselves when we are triggered, and really shifting that lens from I'm broken, I'm wrong, I'm bad, I'm failing because I yelled, because I, you know, whatever, and to, oh, that was an unhelpful habit. Oh, that wasn't in alignment with what I intended. And I think like this is, gosh, just between this, the awareness is, you know, having the awareness of what's going on, and then this lens shift, I think, can really open the door to compassion. And I oftentimes feel it's really challenging to create a shift, and especially an internal shift, when there isn't access to compassion in the moment. I just think that shift that you're talking about there is just so vital for being able to open the door to compassion and the door to change.
Yes, yes. Compassion is really huge. And, you know, compassion, we talk a lot about having compassion for our children, and we need to have compassion for ourselves, right? So like in Trigger to Transform, we focus a lot on self-compassion because it is so easy to throw ourselves into the fire, you know? And like, I've worked with moms who have said, you know, oh, I held it together all day. And then at the end I yelled and I messed everything up. I screwed up everything. And I'm like, really, everything? So now they're going to be 40-year-old living in a ditch somewhere because you yelled after holding it together. I'm like, really? Let's think about this differently, right? And so I often tell people, when you get to that moment, actually, that's the time to celebrate, right? If you held it together all day and then you blew up, yes, let's cheer, because now you have something that you can turn towards and you can learn from, right? Now you could say, what was different in this moment that was different from earlier in the day? For me, it would be, well, now I'm exhausted and I'm tired and my system needs a break. And that was the end of my rope, right? Okay. So what can we do differently when we get to that time of day to give us more compassion, to fill up our tank more, right? To help us to get through to that next moment. I use the word experiment a lot. Like, what's an experiment that we can create, that we can set up to help us in those moments the next time they come around?
Yeah, I love this. This is like an extension. To me, it sounds like an extension of the awareness. As an ontologically trained life coach, something we typically look at is noticing where we stop. Especially when it comes to creating new habits and creating change and shifts. And that's exactly what I hear is like, oh, look, you were able to keep it together all day until this time. This is where you stopped, and like noticing what shifted. Or maybe you're able to get like keep it together for 30 seconds, whereas like previously, like immediately, you know, you're triggered. And so like, just continuing to, how I would say this, just continue to notice where we stop, seeing what had us stop, and look at what we need to be able to expand our capacity there.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So could we dive a little bit deeper into emotional triggers? Like, what are some of the common emotional triggers that come up in parenting? What does it look like?
Oh my gosh, you name it. So really, so the trigger is external to us, right? So the trigger is the thing that the kid does that awakens within us an uncomfortable feeling or sensation or thought. And then that triggered experience that arises within us then often leads to reactions that we're not proud of, right? So a trigger can be anything from a sound or a smell to, you know, that you're like, what? All the way to our children not picking up our clothes, our children saying no, our children kicking. It can even be something that might seem benign to other people, right? So I have a client who was abused as a child, sexually abused as a child. And one of her triggers was when anytime a male would like be around her daughter, like in any capacity, right? And with hands on her daughter, whether it was on her daughter's back or holding her daughter's hand, like that was a trigger for her, you know? And like Uncle Joe holding Susie's hand, walking to the park, that might seem benign for some people, but for her, it was a massive trigger, right? So really being clear around, what is it that sets me off? Because what sets me off and what sets you off and what sets, you know, whoever off is going to be very different. I know in my home, my daughter, oh my gosh, she sets my husband off like nobody's business. They're so much better now. They have worked so, I'm so proud of both of them. They have worked so hard and made huge strides once they realized that this wasn't my hobby. And I know a few things. They started to like, oh, maybe we should listen to a couple of things you have to say. But they still like, they're each other's triggers, right? And for me, it was my son. My son was my major trigger. So things that my daughter would do that would send my husband through the roof, I'd be like, and vice versa. Things that my son would do that would have me like, ah, right? You know, my husband's like, meh. Right. So, and the reason for that is we all have different pasts and different experiences. Often I use the word awakens with us when I was describing a trigger very intentionally, because a trigger is often like a sleeping dog. It's something that usually happened in the past where we were wounded or led to feel something uncomfortable. And there was a part of us that became protective. And that part of us sleeps, you know, in Trigger to Transform, we call it the triggered traveler, right? It kind of sits and just kind of keeps a lookout. But if something happens that, you know, gets that triggered traveler to feel like, oh no, it's happening again. Oh no, the caravan's in danger. We're going to be attacked. Oh no, it pops up and does whatever it needs to do to try to protect the system, to try to protect the caravan from being let off the cliff or whatever the fear is, right? So being able to, the reason why our triggers vary so much is because the thing that happened to me, the wounding or whatever it is that led me to form that type of reaction to that type of behavior is going to be very different from what led that to happen to my husband.
Yeah.
The wounding or just the general experience.
Yeah. This is great. And I'd love for you to go a little bit deeper into how does the way we are raised really impact our triggers and what triggers us. I know you gave a really great example about a trauma situation, and I'd love to hear what other examples or how that can help parents and caregivers understand how some of their triggers may have been formed.
Yeah. So a lot of the parenting triggers often, not always, but often come from some sort of a four horsemen household experience, you know, growing up, at least a lot of the parents that I work with, right? So another example I can give is of a parent who, when they were, so it, their trigger was when his son would prefer mom, right? And I will say I'm changing some details here. Not that I'm giving anything specific where it would be recognizable, but I kind of go overboard. So I'm going to change in terms of protection. So I'm going to change some of the details. But the dad would get really triggered when their son would prefer mom. And so we did some deep work. And what came out was the fact that when dad was really young, he was seriously neglected, you know, and when people in his household turned away from him, that meant he was bad. He was bad. And when I say turn away, I mean, he might not get talked to for a month, you know? And so turning away was really bad. So what was happening was his child was triggering, awakening within him that very young part of him that said, oh no, when people turn away from me, I did something bad. I'm shameful. People don't love, I'm unlovable. All these core beliefs, right, were activated. And it would literally almost become like dad would become like a 7-year-old, you know, in terms of how he's responsible. Fine now, right? You either, you know? And it was just like, what just happened there, you know? And so those types of things, realizing that how we're raised, the experiences that we have growing up, all of those things can significantly impact how we show up, right? And even the ones where we'll say, well, I hated being yelled at. I always like this. I had this experience whenever I was always like yelling was like a huge thing to the point where I would like duck, you know, if somebody would raise their voice, I would have a visceral reaction to that, you know? And I remember specifically times when I would find myself yelling at my kids and I'm like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. Like, this is something that literally would frighten me. And, you know, what's happening now? And sometimes what ends up happening is in order, we because it's a habit, right? Something's modeled for us. And we learn that that's an effective way. Like I didn't like being yelled at, but you know what? When that yelling voice came out, I did what I was supposed to do. You better doggone well believe it, right? So there's a part of me that says, okay, when we're in danger, when there's a threat, when we feel overwhelmed, when things aren't going well, and we can't figure out the next best step, yell, it works, right? So then I find myself falling into that loop, that trigger cycle loop of using this thing that I hated so much growing up, right? So again, it comes back to how can I shift? How can I make a new practice, right? Form a new practice, shift these habits, shift this cycle in a way that can allow me to disconnect from and recreate from the habits that I don't want and recreate new habits that will serve me and my relationship with my child better. It's a lot of inner work, you know, but extremely, extremely rewarding. When I see my clients come out on the other side, it's like many of them, a lot of times are in tears as they talk about where they were and where they've come from. And I don't say that in terms of like, I'm so amazing. No, they did the hard work. Right? I was just there guiding, right? But they did the work. And that's what's important, committing to the process and saying, this will not be my child's legacy. This is not what I'm passing down. It stops with me. And sometimes it can be really hard to be the one to stop the entire, if you think about like a caravan in a desert with hundreds of people, and you have to be the one to stop the caravan, right? That's a lot of work, but extremely rewarding.
Yeah. And this is so great. You know, when we think about like, I think that a lot of parents and caregivers, when they go into parenting, there's an idea that parenting is something like we do to another person. It's something you do to a child, you parent them. And I think that it's not clear from the beginning that a lot of parenting is actually doing inner work, doing work within ourselves, you know, as a parent, as a caregiver. There's a lot of internal work that happens. Parenting is a lot of there's a lot that needs to happen on the inside, more so than or what leads to the things that happen on the outside that you do. And I wouldn't say to a child, but with a child when you're coming from that place of partnership. And I just think that this catches a lot of parents and caregivers by surprise.
Yeah. Like, so when I had a private practice for a number of years, so I do just coaching now, but for a number of years, I had a therapy practice, and it was so funny how many times parents would come in and drop off their kids. Like it was like a oil change. Here it is. It's making this funny noise. Do you think you can check that out? The light's coming on in the dashboard. It's beeping. It's annoying the mess out of me. I'm going to go to Starbucks, grab a latte, and I'll be back when it's fixed. I'm like, no, that's not how this is going to play out, right? Because this is a relationship, and any type of relationship we have with a child, I don't care how old the child is or how young the child is, it's a co-created experience. Right. And parenting, I really think of parenting as a spiritual practice, right? It can really help us not just engage our children differently and transform our legacy, but it can literally transform us from the inside out and thus impact all of our relationships. You know, and I tell people all the time when they get in a T2T, I'm like, we're going to focus on it's called the Empowered Path model. We're going to use this model that I created to help you navigate and negotiate this parenting journey, but everything you learn can be applied to any and every relationship you will ever be in, right? Because it all starts with what's going on within you. We don't actually bring the kid in until like the third module. I mean, it's really a lot of inner work and a lot of self-focus in terms of what's going on with me, because again, that self-awareness is so key. And I can give you 50,000 different tools, tips, and tricks to use with your kid. I can do that very easily. You don't need me to, because I'm sure most of the people I work with, they have more parenting books on the shelf than I do. So, you know, but I can give you all these tools and tricks, but at the end of the day, if that inner transformation hasn't occurred, you're just going to revert back to those things, and it's going to lead to more shame and more anger and more personal frustration within yourself. So it's really, really important, 100%, realizing that parenting, it's sort of like a trick, because you're like, yeah, it's about this little perfect little angel that I'm trying to raise. And now it's really about your inner angels. Right? And as a result of you dealing with them, then that will absolutely have an impact on your child, for sure.
There's a ripple effect there. And, you know, I think one of like the biggest challenges when it comes to creating these new habits, which I just love, like relating to it as creating a new habit. You know, one of the biggest challenges is that it can be really hard to have the awareness in the moment and to also take a different action or kind of take a different path or change course when our brains are hijacked by our triggers and the flood of like feelings and emotions and sensations that come in when we are triggered. Can you speak a little bit more about what's happening biologically on the inside and how we can, you know, start to shift that? Yeah.
Yes. So biologically, it makes like our brains are actually beautiful. I'm a bit of a neuro nerd, so I love talking about the brain. Our brains are actually fascinating. I mean, it's for all intents and purposes, we should not have the brains we do, but we do. And our brains are phenomenal at creating shortcuts. Right. So if I'm a, I always use the cave person example. If I'm a cave person and I'm in the savanna and millions of years ago, and there's this furry creature, and me and my friends are like, what's that furry creature? I don't know. Let's move in closer. And then the furry creature eats my friend Ted. Okay. The next time I see he said furry creature, I shouldn't have to go through that whole process again. Of what's that furry creature? I wonder, maybe it'll do something different this time. Maybe it'll be my friend. I'm sure it's full. You know, no, I need to be able to say, crap, that thing ain't Ted. Run, run, run. We're in trouble, right? So our ability to respond quickly to things that have happened in, or that even remotely resemble something that happens in the past is actually a gift. It's just, we're not really chased by lions and tigers and bears as much nowadays. So it's this overactive trait that we have, right? And so what ends up happening is there are certain things, if I'm running away from the lion that ate Ted, there are certain things I don't need to have access to. Like I don't need to have access to my frontal lobe, which is where the executive functioning occurs, which is where I learn, like I might do like Euclidean geometry or create a plan or, you know, all these different things. I don't need that part of my brain. I don't need my my reproductive organs, right? Like I'm not going to stop and make a baby in that moment, right? So certain cravings or things like that, like those parts of the brain, they're going to shut off. And the parts of the brain that are going to light up are those parts that are going to help me to fight, run, or freeze. Those are the only parts of the brain that I need in that moment. And that's the amygdala. Okay. And so all the blood goes to that part of my brain and the parts of my body that are needed to fight, run, or freeze. That's it. Okay. And so really, we're just these, like, we're basically like this, we're no longer like this fully functioning human being in those moments when we're triggered. We're actually put in a state where we're able to navigate and negotiate a threat. So being able to, and I tell people all the time, the reason why I use the word transforming triggers instead of getting rid of or eliminating, or because you don't really, you can't, and you don't want to, right? Like you don't want to be the first cave people that are like, oh, what's that in the court? That's not who you want to become, right? And the only way that I know you could really just blunt every reaction to everything is with substances, which I highly do not recommend, you know? So you want to be able to do that. But when I talk about transforming the triggers, what I'm really talking about is being able to get us to a point where we can heal our wounds, regulate our emotions, and plan our next best steps in effective ways that at the end of the day leave us feeling having much more access to the frontal lobes in moments that maybe used to send us, you know, into fight, flight, freeze mode and keep us there, right? So we can transform our relationship to them. But in terms of making it where, some people will say that to me, like, I just want to get to a point where all I feel is happy and joy. And I'm like, yeah, when you figure that out, you start a coaching program and then invite me into it and then I'll come. Right? Happy and joy all the time is not a thing. It's not supposed to be, right? But it's how can I navigate and negotiate and even become more comfortable with those negative emotions? Because sometimes we fly off the handle in an attempt to avoid certain negative emotions. Like I've always said, I've had an on again, off again relationship with my feelings for years. And, you know, it took a lot. I tried to learn my way. That's why I have a PhD, because I went to school to try and learn my way into healing. It doesn't work, by the way. Spoiler alert. You actually have to do the work. But I tried, you know, because if I would feel like growing up, tears and sadness, those were a sign of weakness. It was not okay. I mean, I don't know if anybody can relate to phrases like stop crying before I give you something to cry about, you know, all those types of things. So for me, sadness was bad, not good. So whenever I would feel that, when those sad parts would come up in me, I'd become angry. I'd become angry at whomever or whatever elicited that sadness within me. Like, why are you making me this way? Oh, can't stand you. And I'd avoid you. Right? So sometimes what sets us off is the fact that our kid is bringing up things, that feelings or memories or whatever that are awakening within us, those feelings, memories or whatever that are just uncomfortable and that we don't want to face. But that's where we get into what we do in T2T. There's a whole module on healing, right? We got to heal. We got to focus on how can I heal these wounds in a way that will allow me to have more access to those parts of myself and have more compassion for those parts of myself and not externalize all of that onto these precious beings that I deeply want to connect with.
Yeah. This is beautiful. And thinking about like this desire to embrace quote unquote the good feelings and emotions and push away the bad feelings and emotions, this is part of our survival mechanism. It's part of how we've learned to survive by the way we're parented, society, and it's part of what we do to survive. And so, you know, I always say to my clients, we don't want to make a part of ourselves go away. So, you know, it's okay to have a full spectrum of emotions, and we wouldn't want, you know, to take part of us and make that go away. And I always like to say that, reactions are an emotion in action. And so what we want to do is we don't want to get rid of our emotions, but we want to create a little bit of space between our emotions and our actions. And that's how we, you know, start to break up the reactions. And I think like hearing the brain science, I love the brain science of it all. And I'm really glad you shared it with everyone. And every time I'm thinking about the brain science behind it, I really feel that when we learn that this is biologically driven to get triggered, that it opens the door again to being able to access some compassion for ourselves, because being triggered doesn't make anyone bad or wrong. It's biologically driven response. So I just find that super, super helpful.
It is. It's biologically driven. And there's, I think we talked about this last time, like there are certain phrases that I hear a lot, that I don't use, you know, things like saboteur and inner critic and inner monsters, you know, and all these things. And I'm like, who would want to have compassion towards that? You know, like I wouldn't, like a saboteur. Oh my gosh. I picture some like Batman villain or something, right? Like you don't want compassion towards that, right? So one of the things we do in Trigger to Transform is we literally start to create an awareness around who our, like, what are those parts of us that are getting tripped up and set off. So we can get very clear about what it is we're talking about and what it is we're dealing with. Because when we don't do that, it can become this evil character lurking in the dark inside of us, you know? And I often encourage people to take a parts work perspective. Like, what would it be like if this saboteur isn't trying to hurt you, isn't trying to destroy you, but is really trying to protect you and trying to help you, right? Like, how would that shift your relationship with the part of you that yells, right? It's not trying to destroy your family. It's not trying to, you know, throw everybody off a cliff. It's trying to help you because your system is overwhelmed and confused and scared. And the last time you felt overwhelmed and confused and scared, we were 8 years old and that thing happened and then this happened and then that happened and it was horrible and awful and it'll never happen again. So we're not going to make it. We're just not going to do it. But what what that part of us doesn't realize is you're not eight anymore. You know? And so realizing like, okay, all right, all right. This isn't an evil part that needs to be destroyed. I mean, and you're right, we can't destroy them. Like, it's not, we can numb them, which again, don't recommend, could, but they will come back. I had an old mentor that used to say, you know, nothing likes being buried alive, and that includes feelings, you know? So eventually it will do whatever it can, just like any of us would, to get out of that freaking hole, right? And use as much power and resources as it possibly can to not be buried alive, right? So it really is about shifting the relationship that we have with ourselves. And that might, again, take community and support and practice, because if the environment you were raised in gave you the tools to form a very critical or self-shaming relationship with yourself, it's going to take more than a few scripts and a parenting book to, you know, help you shift that. You're going to need a little bit more. I mean, those are great, great starting points, but you might need a little bit more to really help you to get in there and do some of the deeper work.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And for the parents and caregivers who are listening right now, and they're thinking, okay, I see something in this for me. I hear what you're saying and I want to get started. What are some concrete steps that parents and caregivers could take today just to begin that journey of transforming their triggers?
Yeah. You know, I think it goes back to self-awareness. Like, pull out a piece of paper and think about the last time that your kids set you off, you know, and I'll kind of walk through the empowered path, you know, here a little bit, but write down like, okay, when that was happening, what stories were you telling yourself? You know, what body sensations and emotions did you notice coming up in you in that moment? What did you do? What tools did you use? Right? So PATHS is like an acronym, P-A-T-H-S. So perspective, what stories were you telling yourself? Awareness, what body sensations and emotions did you notice? The T, what tools did you find yourself using, right? Did you yell? Did you walk away? Did you shame? Healing, like, what, do you have any insight into maybe where this was coming from? Maybe something from your past? Where have you felt this way before? Maybe it is a signpost that you need rest. Like, what did this tool, you using this particular tool, because we use the tools we use for a reason. We don't arbitrarily yell or shame or shut down. It's for a reason. All behavior is purposeful, right? So what, do you have any insight into that? And with this, can you create, like, what's your next best step in this moment? Maybe some healing needs to occur. Maybe some repairing needs to occur. What needs to happen? But anything that you can do to start gaining more insight into what is this triggered part of me, or what is this triggered traveler, this particular, because we have many triggered travelers within us. What is this particular triggered traveler about? The more insight that you can get into that, the more that you can flesh that part of you out and start to understand it more, then the more you'll be able to recognize it, and the more you can work with it, and start to transform it. That's the first step of going in, right? And really starting to understand, like, what is this? What's going on within me that is leading me? The reaction is the end game. That's the last part of the whole thing. You know, by the time you're yelling or shaming or whatever, like, that whole cycle's happened, right? But the more insight that you can get into things before it even happens, the better off you will be. 100%, I promise.
Yeah, that's a great starting place. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I love how actionable it is, and that, you know, anyone can pull out a piece of paper and do that right now. And I know our time's coming to a close, and before we go, do you have anything else that you want to add or anything we forgot to touch on when it comes to parenting differently from our past?
You know, I think it just, the thing that's coming up for me is just going back to the piece around community. You know, please don't try to do this alone, whether it's Triggered to Transformed or a coach or therapy or whatever it is for you. Please don't do this alone. There is a reason why heart surgeons don't perform surgery on themselves, right? There's a reason why, you know, as a therapist, I couldn't learn my way through. I had to go and get help from someone else who was more objective. I had to be in community with other people, right? In order to really gain insight. So really, in order to relationships are transformed in relationship, right? So making sure that you are accessing a safe community. I said, like Triggered to Transform, where with other people who get it, with other people who understand you, who will not shame you, who will support you, who will nod with you, right? Some sort of support. Like, this should not be done alone, regardless of what the little trigger travelers in your head are telling you. It does not need to be done alone.
Yeah, I love that. It's such a great thing to remember and really brings this conversation full circle. And so that's so supportive. And I know you have a gift that you'd like to offer our audience. Could you tell us more about that?
Yes. So I created a quiz. It's called What's My Parenting Trigger Score? And I love this quiz so much. It's so much fun. Talking about awareness. So when you take this quiz, it puts you into one of three types, warrior, creator, or seeker type. And what it really gives you is that insight and that awareness into how you tend to show up when you're triggered and what are some next best steps you can take. Because the way that we respond and how our triggers operate within us can actually, there is a predictable aspect to it. And that is captured within the quiz. And so if you take the quiz, read the report, take the follow-up steps in the report, you will absolutely begin to see some of those patterns literally showing up in your life. So that's another first step to moving towards gaining that self-awareness and truly starting to transform the triggers.
Awesome. That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that with everyone. And in general, where can everyone go to continue this conversation and learn more about your work?
Yeah. So you can go to my website, of course, Dr. L Willis. So Dr. L is in Ladybug, Willis.com. I'm on Instagram, Facebook. Yeah. Ish. But you can definitely find out more about me from those areas and get in touch. I love chatting with people. So you can also access from my website, my calendar. So if you want to get on and you want to have a chat, and to find out what are your next best steps and where would it be most helpful for you to move and go to actually start this work, hop on my calendar and let's talk.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you coming and just sharing all of your wisdom and humor and passion for supporting parents around their triggers. I really, really appreciate it.
And I appreciate you for doing this and putting this together and giving us a space to come together and have these conversations. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And oh, before we go, I'd like to invite all of you to join the discussion thread for this session in the Transforming Toddlerhood Facebook group, We'd love to hear your thoughts, questions, and feedback. And don't forget to upgrade to the premium package so you can access all of the bonus materials and listen to this session and all the others again and again, and even with your parenting partner. All right, until next time, we'll see you soon. Bye.